Hare Krishna. So we'll continue. Kapiladev, as I mentioned before, he's in a mood of summarizing what he has spoken till now. He has mentioned about the path of Sakama Karma Yoga, how it leads to Swarga, Nishkama Karma Yoga, how it leads to liberation, and the Virat Roop worshippers, how if they worship, if they meditate on the Virat Roop with a sense of devotion towards Lord Vishnu, then they attain Krama Mukti eventually. And if they worship the Virat Roop, or if they meditate on the Virat Roop while worshipping Lord Brahma, thinking that Virat Roop to be an expansion of Brahma, then even though Brahma himself might get liberated, but they won't get liberated. Like that. So now, let's continue. Yetvihasakta manasa karmasu shraddayanvitaha kurvanti aprasiddhani nityanyapi cha kritsnashah. So he says, Yetu Iha Asakta Manasaha. But those people, Iha means in this material world, Asakta Manasaha, whose minds are attached to this material world, Karmasu Shraddayan Vitaha, and who have Shraddha in performing their prescribed duties. Kurvanti Apratishiddhani Nityanyapi. They perform the Kamya Karmas and Nitya Karmas. So Kamya Karmas are those which are performed for some particular, for achieving some particular goal, like Putra Kameshti and those kind of yagyas. And Nitya Karma is, you know, regular, regular activities like Trikala Sandhya and others. Krishna Shaha, to the fullest extent they perform with a desire to achieve some material goal within this material universe. So, Srila Vishnu Jagadagur writes, because of their absence of bhakti, Brahma and others return to the place where people perform Sakama Karma. This is criticized in 6 verses, 16 to 21, the desire to enjoy in this material world is criticized. Even though recommended in scriptures, these Kamya and Nitya Karmas are criticized. What to speak then of performing sinful actions? So, sometimes, you know, the scriptural injunctions are not... We have discussed this few times. I just wanted to again just touch upon this point that not every scriptural injunction is meant for everyone. Just because, you know, there is a Sanskrit shloka in the form of an injunction, that does not mean that injunction is meant for me. In Bhagavad Gita itself, there are many contradictory injunctions. Krishna says, Devan bhavayatanena te deva bhavayantuvaha parasparam bhavayantaha shreyaf param avapsyata. He says, cooperate with the demigods, perform yagyas, please them, they will give you with all the facilities. And then later he says, kamaisteste hritagyana prapadyantya anya devata tepi mameva kaunte yajante avidipurvakam. You know, Alpa Medasa. You know, like that he goes on in one sense criticizing them. Even though he had instructed, cooperate with the demigods, worship them, offer the sacrifices to them, they will reciprocate with you. So which means, you should know which injunction is meant for whom. This is one scripture in which there is somewhere he says, karmanyevadikaraste, And then he says sarvadharman parityajya. So absolutely contradictory injunctions. So how do you resolve? So therefore, you know, one should know what one's adhikar is, what are the symptoms of a person whose adhikar is this, whose adhikar is this, whose adhikar is for Nishkama Karma Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, and what one should practice, which injunction is for whom, that one has to understand. As Krishna says, Yavan Artha Udapane Sarvataha Samplutodake Tavan Sarveshu Vedeshu Brahmanasya Vijanataha. So Krishna says, one who understands the conclusion of the scriptures, Brahmanasya Vijanataha, one who understands the nature of scriptures, the essence of scriptures, he understands which injunction is meant for me and accepts only that injunction. So he gives an example. Yavan Artha Udapane. Different understandings given. Srila Baldev Devabhushan gives this understanding. He says that there is a big reservoir of water. And you want some water. Let's say one bucket water. So if you want one bucket of water, you would take a bucket, fetch one bucket and use. So that one bucket is yours, that's all. So similarly, not that the whole reservoir of water is yours, every drop is meant for you. You take your bucket, someone else will come, they will fetch their bucket, someone may need two buckets, they will bring two buckets and take two buckets of water. The same way, the Vedic scriptures are like a big reservoir of injunctions. Not every injunction is meant for you. So that injunction is there, you have to understand whom is it meant for. So karmanyaiva adhikaraste, it is meant for me. Sarvadharman parityajya is meant for me. Devan bhavayatanena is meant for me. Alpamedasa is meant for me, that is right. So only an alpamedasa would think that, you know, every injunction is of the scripture is meant for him. So it's not like that. The Vedic injunctions are like prescriptions. Different people have different diseases. So a different medicine is prescribed for a different disease. And there are symptoms. Okay, these are the symptoms. This is the disease. This is the prescription. So the same way, Vedic literatures are also like that. So what is your adhikar? Oh, you have this symptom, this symptom, this symptom, this symptom. This is your adhikar. So this is your injunction. Oh, you have these symptoms. So this is your adhikar and this is your injunction. Like that. So one has to know, you know, what is meant for whom. So
Then question. Bruji, on another hand, it is also said like one should have not the tendency of ardha kukkut nyaya, like selective only, but this is good, this is bad. Like, so how we can understand, do this statement?
See, that is why you accept it based on how the acharyas have explained.
Like, especially like in particular in Bhagavad Gita also, like it is applicable, whole instruction is one should apply, or someone is applying only relevant, like particular, they like the particular context.
It's not based on likes, it's based on adhikar. Whether you like it or not. Arjuna didn't like to fight, but he was made to fight. So it's not based on liking, but it's based on adhikar. Otherwise you would never be able to resolve these contradictory injunctions. So if you say, you know, I can't just take one instruction and not follow the other instruction, then how will you follow simultaneously karmanyeva adhikaraste and sarvadharman parityajya? So it's not possible. So therefore, you know, we have to understand it based on the way in which our acharyas have explained. So because of their absence of bhakti, Brahma and others return to the place where people perform sakama karma. This is criticized in 6 verses. Though recommended in scriptures, these kamya and nitya karmas are criticized. What to speak then of performing sinful actions? If even these prescribed actions are criticized, what then to speak of like that? So purport, Prabhupada writes, in this and in the following 6 verses, the Srimad Bhagavatam criticizes persons who are too materially attached. It is enjoined in the Vedic scriptures that those who are attached to the enjoyment of material facilities have to sacrifice and undergo certain ritualistic performances. They have to observe certain rules and regulations in their daily lives to be elevated to the heavenly planets. It is stated in this verse that such persons cannot be liberated at any time. So liberated at any time means, it means until they choose to change their path. So that is, in that sense, you know, there is eternal, there is no eternal damnation. And I doubt if it's there in the other paths also. It's probably you know, based on an improper understanding of that. Because there are many statements where Krishna also says, Kshipami ajasram ashuban. I eternally cast them into demoniac births. Kshipami ajasram ashuban asuri shveva yonishu. Asurim yoni mapanna muda janmani janmani mam apraapyaiva kaunteya, he says. Birth after birth, eternally they can never attain me. Because I eternally cast them into demoniac births. Sounds very much like sounds like a, you know, Christian fundamentalist, extremist opinion. But it's not like that. It has to be understood in the right context. It means, if that person does not choose to rectify his leanings, his inimical attitude towards Krishna, then he does not. So, when Krishna says, avajananti mam muda, manushim tanum ashritam, and then he says, oh, if someone considers me, when I appear in a human form, if someone considers that I am also another ordinary human being, parambhava majananto, not recognizing my transcendental nature, then what does Krishna do? Mogasha, moga karmano, moga jnana vichetasa, rakshasim asurim chaiva prakriti mohinim shrita. Krishna says, I cast them into demoniac species. We may say, oh, that's a punishment. But the person who is being cast, interestingly, does not see it as a punishment. Because when you see, whenever there is a sense of disagreement between our gross body and our subtle body, it creates some kind of tension. So, let's say someone has a we have a human body. Even in today's day and age, in Kali Yuga, if you are openly atheistic, at least 50% of the people will criticize you. Even though it is Kali Yuga. So, you can't be openly atheistic. So, therefore, you know, people philosophize atheism to make it sound very, you know, not so bad. They present it in very euphemistic terms. Okay, so that they are not criticized for being openly atheistic. So Krishna says, don't worry, you don't have to hide and, you know, package it in a way that it is, it doesn't sound all that bad. So I will cast you in a species where you will be glorified for your intentions. So when you criticize me, you will be glorified. What to speak of criticizing? When you try to personally hurt me by hurling spears and shooting arrows, you will be made the hero of that clan. So when Krishna delivers inimical people to Asura Yoni, it is an act of compassion on Krishna. Because he is just trying to, he is seeing that the subtle body is having a kind of inclination. So he is just putting them in a gross body which is very conducive with that subtle body and its inclinations. So it is not considered as a punishment. So therefore, when Prahlad Maharaj offers his prayers, what is the first prayer? First prayer is Brahmadaya Suragana Munayota Siddha Sattvaikatana Gatayo Vachasam Pravahai Naraditum Purugunair Adunapi Pipru Kim Toshtum Arhati Same Harir Ugrajati. So when he says, it is not just a statement of humility, there is an element of truth to it. Because no one gets a gross body by chance. Everyone's gross body is indicative of his subtle intentions. So someone is cast into an asuric body means he has asuric intentions. So therefore, when Prahlad Maharaj says, Kim toshtu marhati same harir ugrajate, I am an ugrajati, how can I please you? Indicates that it is unnatural. So therefore, Vritrasura is spoken, Prahlad Maharaj is spoken, because they are anomalies in their clans. They are not a regular feature. Because generally Asura Yoni means those who have a natural inimical attitude towards Krishna. Because in that species, it is glorious to have that kind of inimical attitude. They are glorified for that. So Krishna says, if you are in human species, you will be criticized and you will lead a miserable life. I don't want you to lead a miserable life. You are inimical to me. May you be glorified for being inimical to me. Take an appropriate yoni for that. So therefore Krishna's casting people into Asura Yoni is also an act of compassion. It's not punishment. So when Krishna says, Shipami ajasram ashuban asuri shweva yonishu, I cast them eternally into demoniac species, means if eternally you wish to maintain such an inimical attitude towards me, I will eternally provide you with a compatible gross body. But if you anytime choose to become favorably disposed towards me, I will still not retain you in an incompatible asura body. Then I will change your body. So therefore, it is, one should not see Krishna casting someone into, because what is favorable and unfavorable is also a subjective perception. So like, when Prahlad Maharaj addresses Hiranyakashipu as Asura Varya, so that is not considered an insult. Probably, Hiranyakashipu was feeling very elated. He is appropriately addressing me, Asura Varya, like that. Whereas if someone else addresses you as an Asura, then it's like a big insult. So it's all subjective in one sense. So you say, it's a big punishment, but the person who has received it sees it as a reward. Like that. Okay, let's continue.
Rajasa kunta manasa kamatmano jitendriyaha pitranyajantyanudinam griheshu abirata shayaha
with minds fatigued by passion, full of desire, with uncontrolled senses and minds absorbed in their household affairs, they daily worship the Pitrus. So, they all fall in this category of Swabhavajam Shraddha. This is not exactly proper shastrically guided. Even though the ways and means to worship the Pitrus are given in Shastras, but it is still considered Avidipurvakam only. Even though the Vidhi is there, but it is considered Avidipurvakam worship because it is not properly received in a proper parampara which encourages Vishnu worship. There are Vaishnava Shraddha methods. Traivargikaste Purusha Vimuka Harimedasaha Katayam Katani Yoru Vikramasya Madudvishaha. These persons are interested in Dharma, Artha and Kama. Traivargikaha Purushaha. Vimuka Harimedasaha Katayam. And they are averse to topics of the Supreme Lord, who knows how to destroy samsara, because they don't want the samsara to be destroyed. Madhu Dvishah, who is the killer of Madhu. Uru Vikramasya, and who is most heroic. Katani, and who is most worthy of praise. So these persons, because they are interested only in Traivargika Karma, they are not interested in hearing the topics of the Supreme Lord, who is capable of destroying samsara, because they are not interested in destroying their material, repeated cycle of birth and death. So here Srila Prabhupada writes, Supreme Lord is here described as Hari Medha, or he who can deliver one from the cycle of birth and death. Materialistic persons are never interested in hearing about the marvelous pastimes of the Lord. They think that they are fictions and stories, and that the Supreme Lord is also a man of material nature. They are not fit for advancing in devotional service or Krishna consciousness. Such materialistic persons are interested in newspapers, stories, novels and imaginary dramas. The factual activities of the Lord, such as Lord Krishna's acting in the battle of Kurukshetra, or the activities of the Pandavas, or the Lord's activities in Vrindavan or Dwaraka, are related in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which are full of activities of the Lord. But the materialistic persons who engage in elevating their position in the material world are not interested in such activities of the Lord. So they don't want to hear. So it is not just their, as Dhruva Maharaj also says, Nunam Vimushtamatayas Tavamayayate Etvam Bhavapyaya Vimokshanam Anya Hetoho Archanti Kalpakatarum Kunapopa Bogyam Ichanti Yat Sparshajam Nirayepi Nirnam. He says that, my dear Lord, you are Bhavapyaya Vimokshanam. You are capable of liberating one from this ocean of material existence. But Anya Hetoho Kalpakatarum. But people think that you are a desire fulfilling tree for fulfilling their material desires. They see you as a Kalpakataru, but for what? Anya Hetoho. Other hetus other than liberation from material world. And Ichanti Yat Sparshajam Upabogyam. And they pray from you, they try to get that which is those kind of objects which are just for their sense gratification. Sparshajam Upabogyam. While you can give them the kingdom of God, they want some material things. So therefore he says, you know, I fall in such a category. Nunam vimushta matayas, he says, these artharthis are complete crazy fellows. You know, while you can give the kingdom of God, you are willing to give the kingdom of God, they want some sparshajam upabogyam. So, like that, he is quite heavy because he himself falls in that category. Whereas the other two categories, jigyasu and artha, he is quite mild describing them. Oh, they also surrender unto you, like that. They surrender unto you for this reason, and that you reciprocate with them in this way. But then he says, of all these, the artharthis are the worst. Like that he presents. Even though it's not a philosophical conclusion, it just indicates a mode of self-criticism born out of natural Vaishnava humility. Because the Dhruva Maharaj who is speaking this is not a artharthi. He is a pure devotee who is offering these prayers. But thinking about his previous life, he is criticizing heavily. Born out of natural humility. So therefore this statement is also not philosophically right. To conclude that of artha, artharthi, jigyasu and jnani, artharthi is the worst. You know, that's not a very valid conclusion. Like that. So, Srila Prabhupada here writes in the purport, Supreme Personality of Godhead is here described as Hari Medaha. Oh, we have read this. Okay.
Noonam Daivena Vihata Yecha Chuta Kata Sudam Hitva Shrinvantya Sadgata Purisham Iva Ved Bujaha. Daivena Vihata, struck by fate.
Let's try to understand what is the meaning of struck by fate. We'll read the whole translation and then let's try to think about it.
Daivena vihata achyuta kata sudam hitva, rejecting the nectar of topics of the Lord. Shrinvanti asad gata, they hear material topics. Purisham iva vidbujaha, just like pigs eating rubbish.
So similarly, so here it is mentioned that they're rejecting the nectar of topics of the Lord is attributed to fate. So, what is the understanding here? He is
so they didn't want to serve Lord before. So Lord is arranging the same situation for them in the next life.
In that way. Okay. Anyone else? They previously expressed the desire for not serving the Lord, and therefore Lord has put them in a situation where they can continue to not serve the Lord. Okay. Anyone else? Yes, Samarpan Goprabhu. They are envious towards the Lord.
Envious of Lord, so naturally Lord will not give them the taste.
Okay. Krishna, yeah. Eating rubbish. Okay. Okay. So Krishna says four kinds of people surrender on to me. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritino arjuna. So sukritinaha, because those people have some attraction for following the scriptures, those who are attracted to following the scriptures, they get attracted to worshipping the Supreme Lord. And again, because they never got an opportunity to come in touch with people who created or helped generate that desire to take shelter of the scriptures and worship Lord. That's the reason why they are not worshipping. So lack of opportunity to meet with the devotees of the Lord and get their hearts transformed. That is the reason. So therefore, daivena. So therefore, such people, even though are mentioned in quite criticizing language by Krishna, but it is not exactly criticism. If you read the explanations, like Krishna says, avajananti mam mudha. So that mudha is not mentioned in a very criticizing tone. Because why is he not worshipping the Supreme Lord? In contrast to that, two verses later, he says, Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakriti mashrita bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutadi mavyayam, he says. So Mahatma is contrasted with this muda here in that series of verses. So Mahatma is translated as a person who is fortunate for having had the opportunity of coming in touch with devotees. And therefore, muda is translated not as fool. Muda is translated as unfortunate. Not having the fortune of coming in contact with devotees. So, those who are averse to the Supreme Lord are meant to be, they need compassion, not criticism. Because just like they can't, the receiver of bhakti cannot take credit for receiving it. One who has not received cannot be criticized for not receiving it also. So, therefore, when the scriptures talk about these people in little harsh terms, it is not exactly criticizing them. It is actually indicating their unfortunate situation. They are not held responsible for that in one sense. So if someone has not received bhakti, he is not responsible. Who is responsible? The zonal acharya of that area is responsible. If he gets bhakti, who is responsible? The zonal acharya is responsible. So either way, he never gets the criticism also, nor does he get the credit also. So the receiver of bhakti, no credit to him. If he practices, he gets credit. For receiving it, he doesn't get credit. If he does not receive bhakti, he is not criticized. Like that. Srila Prabhupada writes here, the hog is interested in eating stool. If the hog is offered some nice preparation made of condensed milk or ghee, he won't like it. He would prefer obnoxious, bad-smelling stool, which he finds very relishable. Materialistic persons are considered condemned. They are considered condemned, not condemnable. There is a difference. What is the difference between condemned and condemnable?
They are condemned of not getting association of devotees.
Condemned means unfortunate.
Unfortunate.
Condemnable means?
They cannot be criticized.
Condemnable means meant to be criticized. Condemned means they are unfortunate. So materialistic persons are considered condemned because they are interested in hellish activities and not in transcendental activities. The message of the Lord's activities is nectar, and besides that message, any information in which we may be interested is actually hellish. So then he says, Dakshinena patāryam na pitrulokam vrajantite prajām anuprajayante smashānānta kriyākṛtah.
performing scriptural duties from impregnation till death, they go to Pitruloka by the southern course of the sun, Aryamna Dakshinena Pata, and they are reborn again. They are reborn amongst family members. Where is it indicated? Anywhere in Bhagavad Gita? Which chapter? This is indicated in the 8th chapter again. The other one. Dhumo Ratris Tata Krishna Shanmasa Dakshinayanam Tatra Chandramasam Jyotir Yogi Prapya Nivartate. So the path of, coming back. So Arjuna asks, what are the paths where he never comes back, and what is the path that he takes which brings him back to this material world? So Krishna answers by mentioning this is the path. It is called the Dhumadi Marga and Archiradi Marga. So the Dhumadi Marga is this, Archiradi Marga we already discussed. So, departing on the path of smoke, the night, the waning fortnight, the southern course of the sun, and attaining Swargaloka, the Karma Yogi returns.
Regarding the that those who are not accepting bhakti, they are not condemned in the scriptures.
They are condemned. Condemned in the sense they are not criticized, but they are considered unfortunate.
Yes, and there are very strong shlokas as well, where it is mentioned that how someone is not practicing bhakti, what kind of foolish life he is actually living. Like various sections of Bhagavatam do mention very strong condemnation of.
Let's take one verse at a time.
So, like for example, in the second canto, you have the comparison of the people, those who do not practice bhakti. Yeah. And those who are entering into like demigod worship, etc., all that is very heavily condemned over there. All these different paths which he is taking. All that shloka started.
Shvavid varaha ushtrakarehi samstutai purusha pashuhu nayat karna patopeto jatu nama gadagrajaha. That is also not in a very criticizing language. See, when a it is mentioned, see, all those four animals are very unfortunate animals in that sense. So it is like it is like if someone never had an opportunity to study beyond fourth or fifth standard, it is like can he be criticized for not completing degree? No. But he is considered unfortunate. So therefore, if one understands how one receives bhakti, then you understand that those who have not received it cannot be criticized. You came little late, I think. We were just discussing that same verse. So there the word muda means unfortunate.
Dushkritina also is mentioned. I was talking from this perspective.
Yeah.
Like they are so
Dushkriti,
also
Dushkriti should be taken as opposed to Sukriti. So Sukriti means those who have those who have that favorable devotional credit. So how is it? How does one get it? Somehow, if they by chance receive the association of a devotee who bestows it to them. So if one never had an opportunity to meet such a person, then he will not have it. Then he will not worship Krishna. So can he be criticized?
Well, the criticism is not in the sense that he should be condemned only.
That's what I was mentioning.
Again, what I am saying is that we cannot say that We cannot say that cause of the bhakti is definitely bhakti only. But what I am saying is that the person who is going to accept it or not, I mean, we cannot go on the zone where we say that he is completely not responsible for his, otherwise we will say he is not responsible for his actions as well.
No, not in that sense. If he if he does not accept bhakti, then he is still responsible for his actions. He does not transcend the realm of karma. There is a system of responsibility there. That system is called the system of karma. So where he is held responsible for his actions. So there the responsibility is, do you act in a pious way or an impious way? In that sense he is judged. So that, not that he is not judged at all. But to transcend the realm of karma, then bhakti is the only means. And whether one cannot be held responsible for not having bhakti, because that is only bestowed by someone. If no one has come to bestow it to him, how can you hold him responsible for that?
Yeah, he has chosen not to also accept, because sometimes the devotees may be say pure devotee acharyas like Prabhupada may be preaching, but then someone is not accepting it at all after several attempts also.
We elaborately discussed on this morning, so I don't want to start the discussion again. So as I mentioned, I'll just make this one statement, repeat the statement that we discussed this morning. If someone doesn't accept the message, if at all someone is to be criticized for it, it is the person who is delivering the message. And if someone accepts the message, if someone is to be congratulated for it, it is again the person who delivers the message. In terms of receiving the seed of bhakti, the credit goes to the preacher. If someone does not take up to it, then the criticism also goes to the preacher.
We also condemn the Danavas, the demons also. For example, they are in presence of Krishna, but still they are not able to accept it. Like when Krishna is showing his universal form, still Duryodhana is not accepting, Karna is not accepting.
That's what we are discussing. They are considered unfortunate.
So what Krishna, Krishna has shown the universal form.
Yeah, because Krishna showed the universal form, but to accept it, a favorable attitude is needed. So, but a favorable attitude one can get only if one has bhakti. And if he has accepted bhakti, so when we criticize Duryodhan or anyone, any demigod for that matter, it is at that point where that particular pastime is narrated. Is Duryodhan still not yet a devotee? We do not know.
I mean, there is one thing I wanted to point out. Like, surely we can increase the favorable samskaras of the people when it comes to making them favorable towards bhakti. But we cannot make it 0 or 1 at that point of time. I feel what is happening is we are making it 0 or 1. Maybe we have made them favorable, but still their own material attachments are still blocking their progress. And that is what is being condemned when I am talking about condemnation. For example, Dhritarashtra is receiving...
Okay. I'll just make this one point and then we'll move on. See, when material attractions and affections are there, from a point of view of, you can say, it really slows down their progress in bhakti. So again, I'm requesting you to consider that, try to separate the Shraddha and Swabhava. So someone may be convinced that yes, the ultimate goal of life is to worship Krishna, but he may find it very, very difficult to exclusively do it because of his family attractions and affection. So that is a weakness on the part of his swabhava. But when I am talking about a person receiving the seed of bhakti, I am talking about the Shraddha part, not the swabhava part. So all these obstacles that you are talking about, previous samskaras and material affection and all that, that's on the level of swabhava. And receiving the seed of bhakti is not dependent on whatever his swabhava might be. That's what is indicated by these verses, Kirata, Hunandra, Pulinda, Pulkasha.
But the Shraddha also, is it not of three levels? I mean, we speak about Kanishtha.
Oh, after receiving, then one can elevate it from Kanishtha to Madhyama, Madhyama to Uttama. That's a whole different story. After one receives the seed, is a different chapter altogether. So we are talking about receiving the seed. So someone may receive it with a very favorable baggage, someone may receive it with an unfavorable baggage. We are not talking about that at all. We are talking about receiving it. So who receives it? To whomever it is delivered. Who does not receive it? To whomever it is not delivered. That's what we were discussing yesterday in Madhurya Kadamini also. So Krishna gives the full credit to the devotee who is delivering it. So if someone has not received it, then it's unfortunate on the part of that person. In that sense, having received it, if one does not follow it, he is definitely responsible for it. So having received it, if one does not elevate himself, if one is stuck to his material attachments, he is definitely to be criticized. But if one has not received it at all, he is not to be criticized. That's the point that I'm trying to make. We'll move ahead.
Tataste kshina sukrutaha punar lokam imam sati patanti vivasha devaihi sadyo vibramshito dayaha.
Having exhausted their pious results, they helplessly fall to earth again, their enjoyment destroyed by fate. So kshine punya marte lokam vishanti, they again come back.
Tasmatvam sarva bhavena bhajasva parameshtinam tadguna shrayaya bhaktya bhajaniya padambujam.
Again he is second time concluding. Tasmat, therefore, sarva bhavena, same thing he had mentioned there also. With full attention, tvam bhajasva parameshtinam, you should worship the Supreme Lord. Bhajaniya padambujam, whose attractive lotus feet are meant for worship. Tad guna ashrayaya bhaktya, by bhakti caused by his attractive qualities. So, the qualities of the Supreme Lord are so attractive that naturally one is inspired to perform bhakti. What is that verse? Atma ramas chamunayo nirgranta pyurukrame kurvanti ahaitukim bhaktim ittam bhuta guno hari. Such are the wonderful qualities of Lord Hari that even an Atmarama is inspired to worship Lord Hari. Tad guna ashraya bhaktya, that bhakti which takes shelter of the wonderful qualities of the Supreme Lord. Like that. So therefore he says that, you know, all these various other practices will give you only some temporary benefit, especially the sakama karma, shine punya martilokam vishanti. Therefore this is not really worth it, and I have not spoken it for you also. So therefore you continue, I know where your shraddha is, so continue worshipping the Supreme Lord sarva bhavena, with full attention. And it's a very pleasing activity to do, because tad gunashrayaya bhaktya, that bhakti gets great impetus from the wonderful pleasing qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like that. So Srila Prabhupada here writes in the purport, sarva bhavena means in all loving ecstasy. Bhava is the preliminary stage of elevation before the attainment of pure love of Godhead. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Buddha bhava samanvitaha. One who has attained the stage of bhava can accept the lotus feet of Krishna as worshipable. This is also advised herein by Lord Kapila to his mother. Also significant in this verse is the phrase tad guna ashrayaya bhaktya. This means that discharging devotional service unto Krishna is transcendental. It is not a material activity.
tad guna. What is Krishna's guna? Transcendental. Tad guna ashraya bhaktya, which means bhakti is transcendental, is indicated here. Bhakti is made of tad guna. Bhakti has taken shelter of the guna of Krishna, which is Satchidananda. So bhakti is also Satchidananda. Later Prabhupada writes, tad guna ashraya means that Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities are so sublime that there is no need to divert one's attention to any other activities. His behavior with the devotees is so exalted that a devotee need not try to divert his attention to any other worship. It is said that the demoniac Putana came to kill Krishna by poisoning him. But because Krishna was pleased to suck her breast, she was given the same position as his mother. Devotees pray, therefore, that if a demon who wanted to kill Krishna gets such an exalted position, why should they go to anyone other than Krishna for their worshipful attachment? Like that. Then he continues, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitah Janayatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Yad Brahma Darshanam. Very similar verse. But here the meaning is different. Jnanam Yad Brahma Darshanam. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitah. Bhakti directed to the Supreme Lord Vasudev. Ashu Janayati very soon generates Vairagyam and Jnanam, detachment and knowledge, Yad Brahma Darshanam, from which if one desires, he can achieve his goal of realizing Brahman and merging into Brahman, which is generally the goal of the Jnana Yogis. As Krishna says, Yat Karmabir Yat Tapasa Jnana Vairagyatashchayat Yogena Dana Dharmena Sarvam Madbhakti Yogena Madbhakta Labate Anjasa Swarga Apavarga Maddama Katanchid Yadivanchati, he says. So whatever can be achieved by practicing the path of karma or jnana or yoga, everything my devotee by performing bhakti alone can achieve it. So here is one of the proofs where Kapiladev says that if you perform bhakti unto Lord Vasudev, it creates the necessary jnana and vairagya needed to achieve Brahman. If one may desire to achieve that. So here, Srila Vishnu Chakradhakur indicates, even the person desiring jnana should perform bhakti. Brahma Darshanam means realization of Brahman. So, he has told, just now he has mentioned to his mother, Tattvam tasmatvam sarvabhavena bhajasva parameshtinam. Therefore, with full attention, you should worship the Supreme Lord. He says, what to speak of bhaktas, even if one desires to merge in the Brahma Jyoti, still one can perform bhakti and achieve that result. Like that. Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport, Brahma Darshanam means to realize or understand the transcendence. One who engages in the service of Vasudev can actually realize what Brahman is. If Brahman is impersonal, then there is no question of Darshanam, which means seeing face to face. Darshanam refers to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. Of course, this he sees while worshipping. He worships the person Vasudev with a desire to merge into the impersonal Brahman. Unless the seer and the seen are persons, there is no darshanam. Brahma darshanam means that as soon as one sees the Supreme Lord, he can at once realize what impersonal Brahman is. A devotee does not need to make separate investigations to understand the nature of Brahman. Bhagavad Gita also confirms this. Brahma bhuyaya kalpate. A devotee at once becomes a self-realized soul in the absolute truth. So then, he gives further proof by telling, such a person who realizes the Brahman
you know, he will develop these qualities. These will be the symptoms of a person who has realized the Brahman by practice of Bhakti Yoga. He says, Yadasya chittam arteshu sameshvindriya vrittibihi na vigranati vaishamyam priyam apriyam ityuta satadaivatmanatmanam nissangam samadarshanam heyopadeya rahitam arudam padamikshate. So he says, when the mind of a person with some bhakti, he has some bhakti, Vasudeve Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita was mentioned. Na vigranati vaishamyam. He does not perceive priyam, apriyam, differences such as good or bad in material objects, which are equally accepted by the senses, whether it is, which means, which was previously priyam and apriyam because of the presence of impressions. Because of the presence of past impressions of enjoyment, one finds some object priya, another object apriya, and some other object makes no, you know, it does not, he is indifferent to it. Why? That object which he is attracted to indicates that previously he had an experience of enjoying it, and the mind is accessing that file and it's passing on the message that pleasurable, go for it. And if he is finding something apriya, which means again means he has had a previous experience with that sense object which was not so pleasurable, mind is accessing that file and say run away from it. If he is looking at another object and he is indifferent to it, then the mind is not able to find any impression, past impression of such an interaction with that, like that. So when the mind of a person with some bhakti does not perceive differences such as good or bad in material objects which are equally accepted by the senses, which means all the unfavorable material impressions have been wiped out by practice of bhakti. By intelligence, he then experiences himself as jiva. You know, self-realization is indicated here. Endowed with detachment, with equal vision, devoid of conceptions of good or bad, and then realizes Vaikuntha or Brahman, which is almost achieved. Of course, almost achieved means, as soon as he gives up his body, it will be achieved. That's what it means. Okay, so the symptoms are indicated here. Let's move ahead. Jnanamatram param brahma paramesh paramatmashve paramatmeshvara puman drishyade vipratak bhavair bhagavan eka iyate. So he says that ekah bhagavan, the one form of bhagavan, param brahma iyate, is also perceived as brahman. What is that Brahman? Jnana matram. Consciousness alone, without any qualities. And he is also perceived as Paramatma. Paramatma Puman. The Purusha, the Ishwaraha, the controller. Drishyadibihi, by differing practices. Pritak Bhavaihi, performed by different practitioners. So, the same personality, Bhagavan, is only perceived as Brahman and Paramatma by different practices performed by different practitioners. The Jnana Yogis, they perceive Bhagavan only as Brahman. Just like persons who are standing very far away from a train, they are seeing the train only as light. And when that comes little more closer, another person sees the train only as a long strip or whatever you may want to call it. And when it comes to the station, that person understands that, oh,
this light is also this train only, and that long strip is also this train only, just that it was perceived from a longer distance. That's all. So here Kapiladev is giving a rationale behind, if Jnana Yoga is meant to, is the prescribed process meant for getting Brahman realization, and Ashtanga Yoga is the prescribed process for meant for receiving Paramatma realization, how is it by practice of bhakti one can achieve the same results? He says, because by bhakti it is that same person Bhagavan who is worshipped, who is non-different from Brahman and Paramatma. So understanding Bhagavan, one gets the perfect understanding of Paramatma feature and Brahman feature. But through worship of Jnana, you cannot realize Bhagavan. Because Brahman, just like Brahman is the partial feature of Bhagavan, Jnana also is partial. So it cannot help one realize the full feature of Bhagavan. So a rationale is given. If bhakti is the prescribed process of realizing Bhagavan only, so how can you realize Brahman and Paramatma also by practice of bhakti? This is the reason. Because Bhagavan is the complete understanding of the same personality who is also perceived as Brahman and Paramatma by other practitioners, and they are considered to be partial understanding. So when the train arrives at the station, the light is also there with the train. And that whatever you perceived as the long strip, all the bogies are also there. So therefore one need not, if one wants that light only, once the train comes to the platform, one can always, one can always do that, but if one can get the right permission, maybe go to the shed and do something. Yeah.
Sometimes it is heard that in bhakti also somebody advances through Brahman and Paramatma realization and then he sees Bhagavan. Is it correct?
In bhakti also someone
goes through this, first he realizes the Brahman aspect of the Lord, then he realizes the Paramatma aspect of the Lord, and then he realizes ultimately Bhagavan.
I don't remember hearing that way. Oh, that's, in Dhruva's case, did he, no, it's not described that, like that. The form which Narada Muni had suggested, he was worshipping that, and he first appeared within his heart. I have to check that. Because it is mentioned that the Lord first manifested within his heart and then he manifested in front of him. So it's not mentioned that he was meditating on the Paramatma form of the Lord. So it is the Bhagavan, anyone who practices, Krishna says, I mean Bhagavatam says, Pravishta Karnarandrena Swanam Bhava Saroruham. So that is not the Paramatma form. Because then he need not mention that he enters, because he is always there. What is the need for entering? When someone is always there, then you don't say that he entered. So it is explained that who enters? The Bhagavan feature enters. He is there. He is there.
Can we say like Brahman is the energy aspect of the Lord, that everything is Brahman? When one sees everything as energy of the Lord, he uses everything as service of the Lord and sees every particle, everything is the energy of the Lord, then it's a Brahman realization. And he sees the Lord is present in heart of
that's the Vaishnava understanding of realizing Brahman. That's how a Vaishnava realizes Brahman.
Yeah.
In one sense.
Yes. You can say. So means already before we actually see Krishna, this realization is already dawned for a person. He comes out of duality, dvesha, man-woman duality, aman-apman. So coming out of this duality itself is a Brahman realization that everything is arranged by the Lord and Lord's.
I understand your point, but does it happen in that sequence that before Bhagavan realization one realizes?
It is included, Guruji.
It's included.
It's included. Like we are worshipping Krishna, then we start seeing everything connected to Krishna.
Yeah, yeah,
and Krishna in the heart of all living beings. So
correct. That is there. But I don't think it happens in sequence that first one realizes the Brahman aspect, then Paramatma aspect. When one understands the Bhagavan aspect, automatically in the right perspective one understands the Brahman and Paramatma aspect. Yeah.
So initially only a devotee progresses on this
path.
So it's always.
So Srila Vishnu Chakra Thakur mentions here in the chapter on Bhakti Yoga, that is the 25th chapter, Kapiladev mentioned Pashyanti Teme Ruchiranyambasanta. In that verse he says it is mentioned that the result of bhakti is to be the Lord's associate filled with prema in the Lord's abode. That is the purpose of bhakti. And in the 27th chapter, which spoke about the path of jnana, it is mentioned that the result of jnana is merging in Brahman. And in the chapter on Ashtanga Yoga, it was mentioned that the result of Ashtanga Yoga is also liberation. But in this chapter, it is indicated that the results of bhakti, jnana and yoga are achieved by performing bhakti alone. Of course, this is confirmed elsewhere also. Akama sarva kamo va moksha kamo udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena. And also yat karma bir yat tapasa, 11th canto verse. So what is the logic behind this? If there is a clear path mentioned for achieving some particular goals, how can one path help one achieve all goals? This is our understanding of yato mat tato path.
In a village, there are different source of body are there, water source are there, used for different purposes. There are stagnant water. When there is a river flowing, then the same water is used for all purposes because of flowing river. The bhakti is like a all-inclusive thing.
Correct. Yeah. Right. That's what he is also mentioning. The present verse answers, the one Bhagavan full of six opulences is perceived as Brahman and Paramatma by the jnanis and yogis. The quality of Parabrahman is pure consciousness alone, and the quality of super soul is the Ishwara quality, the controller. Because Bhagavan contains both Brahman and Paramatma, by bhakti as sadhana to worship that Bhagavan, one achieves the perfection of bhakti, that is becoming an associate of the Lord, as well as merging within the Lord, which is the perfection of Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga. On the other hand, by practice of Jnana or Ashtanga Yoga, one doesn't become an associate of the Lord because they are partial. Their objective is partial, therefore the process is also partial. So therefore that process cannot bestow the whole benefit like that. So therefore Bhagavan is the superset of Brahman and Paramatma. Similarly, bhakti is also the superset of Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga. So when the superset is there, then the subsets are automatically there like that.
Can we not say, in one sense, we can always differentiate when we have to talk to people, those who are not having so much of faith on only bhakti, but can we not understand by full understanding, like this verse, 26 verses, it seems like there is only one yoga practice to realize the Supreme Lord, and all others are like the tinges which of personal misunderstandings a person puts into the path of bhakti, and therefore he actually doesn't realize the full aspect of the Lord also. He only realizes a partial aspect of the Lord because his own misunderstanding, which he puts as jnana or karma or ashtanga. In one sense, it becomes...
Yeah, in one sense.
Because there is only one object of realization also, that is Supreme Lord Bhagavan. But yeah, then, as you were saying about an, one particular commentary, Vishnachakra says about that vision.
Yeah.
That with full vision one can see Bhagavan, but with partial vision he is able to see only Paramatman. With even less vision he is able to only see Brahman.
Correct, correct.
So, same way, it's actually one path of bhakti only which everyone is practicing, but because of their contaminations of wrong types of understanding which they have, so they are only realizing the partial aspects of the Lord.
Correct. Yeah. Agreed. Okay. So then, he continues that etavaneva yogena samagreneha yoginaha युज्यते विमतो ह्यर्थो यद् असंगस्तु कृत्स्नशः. But there is something, even though the three paths are, even though bhakti is said to be the topmost path, but there is still something common between these paths also. What is that? Complete detachment from sense objects. कृत्स्नशः असंगः, complete detachments from sense objects. Abhimataha is recognized as a necessary factor for achieving the goals of the devotees, the jnanis and the yogis through the practice of bhakti, jnana and yoga. Even though by one practice one achieves the realization of Brahman, by the other practice he achieves the realization of Paramatma, and by bhakti one achieves the realization of Bhagavan, but either way, by practice of all these processes, one achieves complete detachment from sense objects. Like that. So there is something common to all these practices. Like that. So now, in this,
though this complete detachment is common, but the way it is, the focus is different in the different parts. Like in Ashtanga and Jnana specifically, it is like one of the goals only which he has to achieve only. Whereas in the Bhakti, it happens as a matter of fact.
Automatically happens. Yeah.
Because he's focusing more on the Lord's qualities, etc. He's getting so much attracted, therefore the detachment is manifesting. Detachment is not the focus of the devotee as such.
Yeah, correct. The Prabhupada here writes in the purport, there are three kinds of yoga, namely Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga. Devotees, jnanis and yogis all try to get out of the material entanglement. The jnanis try to detach their sensual activities from material entanglement. The Jnana Yogi thinks that matter is false and that Brahman is truth. He tries therefore by cultivation of knowledge to detach the senses from material enjoyment. So how the Jnani achieves it is mentioned. The Ashtanga Yogis also try to control the senses. Like Chitta Vritta Nirodha. That is common for all the yogas. Yoga, Chitta Vritti Nirodha. So to stop the functioning of the, not just the senses. That is just a byproduct. But before that, you know, the chitta itself, you know, its vritti has to be stopped. Only then the senses will not come in touch with the sense objects. Their vritti will stop. So chitta vritti nirodha is the is what is spoken of here actually. The Ashtanga Yogis also try to control the senses. The devotees, however, try to engage the senses in the service of the Lord. Therefore, it appears that the activities of the bhaktas are better than those of the jnanis and yogis. The mystic yogis simply try to control the senses by practicing the 8 divisions of yoga, that is yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, etc. And the jnanis try by mental reasoning to understand that sense enjoyment is false. But the easiest and most direct process is to engage the senses in the service of the Lord, like that. So in the next section, Kapila will speak on this path of jnana. He has now spoken that how by practice of bhakti one can achieve the goals of other processes also. So now in this next section, he will speak about this path of jnana. This 128th verse will itself take some time to discuss, and it's already 6:20. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.